welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Brian Benoit. In this week's recap, Kodiak has significantly fewer students this year for the second year in a row.
We budgeted at a minus 3.5%, and we saw a solid 5% decline in our average daily membership for the month of October.
That's coming up.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
But first, near-record high winds around the Kodiak Archipelago grounded flights to and from the city for most of the day on Wednesday, as the island was under a high wind warning from 4 a.m. to 1 p.m. The peak wind speed recorded at the Kodiak Airport was 75 miles per hour around 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday. Climatologist Rick Toman with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy said via email that this is the second strongest wind peak recorded in Kodiak for the month of October since at least 2000. The highest was recorded last October at 78 miles per hour. Toman also said another wind speed sensor on the local Matson Crane reported a gust of 83 miles per hour just after 9 a.m. on Wednesday. Kodiak Electric Association recorded wind speeds of 122 miles per hour on top of Pillar Mountain from the sensor on the cooperative's wind turbines, according to an email from President and CEO Dan Menth. The City of Kodiak's emergency responders did not report any significant damage or incidents as a result of the high wind. And speaking of municipal government, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly's newest member, Caroline Roberts, will remain on the Borough Assembly until the next municipal election. That's despite a last-minute veto from former Borough Mayor Scott Arndt. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports.
Caroline Roberts was selected by the Borough Assembly to fill a seat left vacant after Ryan Sherritt resigned last month from the Assembly due to family reasons. Roberts was one of four applicants who threw their names into the hat for consideration after initially running in the regular municipal election. But earlier this month, outgoing Borough Mayor Scott Arndt vetoed Roberts' appointment. It was his last act as mayor, and the day after Roberts was sworn in by the Borough Assembly. Arndt said in his memo to the borough that he vetoed her appointment due to her lack of experience with governance in Kodiak and because she received the least amount of votes during this month's regular election. Kodiak resident Leanna Harrington expressed similar sentiments during public comments at a special meeting on Monday.
And the numbers are in black and white. There is a 104 count difference. You had four people who ran for that vacant seat. 104 count difference between the bottom and the next one running.
Rob Lindsay was also one of the applicants who filed to fill the vacant assembly seat. He also ran for the two separate borough assembly seats in this month's municipal election. Lindsay did not win either seat and received 628 votes during the municipal election, while Roberts received 524, the least amount of votes out of all the borough assembly candidates on the ballot. Monday's special meeting was called with the sole purpose of discussing what to do about Arndt's veto. According to the borough attorney, outgoing Mayor Arndt's veto was filed the day after Roberts took the oath of office and was sworn in. Therefore, it was untimely and invalid. Not all of the assembly members agreed with the attorney's written opinion, but none objected to allowing Roberts' appointment. Additionally, former assembly member Ryan Sherritt, whose vacant seat was filled by Roberts, submitted a letter to the borough assembly endorsing her appointment. Before adjourning the special meeting, borough mayor Jared Griffin ruled that the assembly would follow the attorney's opinion and that no vote to override the veto was legally necessary. For transparency, Griffin is also the general manager at KMXT. He does not have any editorial influence over news stories, and he did not review the story before it was aired. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
And Kodiak has significantly fewer students this year, for the second year in a row after the school district completed its student count. KMXT has this report that it's going to be a major consideration as school officials revise the current year's budget and plan for next year. Kodiak's population has declined for about the last decade, according to census data. And for the most part, the Kodiak Island Borough School District has planned for about a 3% reduction in its student count from year to year. But the shrinkage is hitting faster in recent years. Cindy Mika is the district superintendent.
We budgeted at a minus 3.5%, and we saw a solid 5% decline in our average daily membership for the month of October.
It's the second year in a row the district has faced that steep of a drop. Predictions for enrollment next year are due in early November, and Mika says she plans to tell the state's Department of Education this is the new pattern going forward.
Based on the numbers that we're seeing what we're going to turn into the state is a 5% drop.
That 5% decline is an adjusted number. The actual drop in student count in school hallways and classrooms was closer to 8% from last year to this year. However, the district saw a boost in kids using correspondence and homeschool programs compared to their expectations, which makes up some of the difference. The school district doesn't receive full funding from the state to support correspondence students, but it does receive about 90% of the funding they would if the students were in classrooms full-time. Some of that money is set aside to reimburse parents. Rural school attendance in Kodiak's villages largely came in as the district expected, except for Port Lions, which had 8 more students than predicted. The superintendent says the budget for this year should still be okay and use up nearly all of the district's fund balance or reserves. However, without that cushion for next year, Mick is closely watching this year's finances to have an accurate idea of how to plan going forward.
Probably 90% of my day right now is spent on finances and the budget.
Some of her budget planning has also been interrupted by the federal government shutdown. Usually this time of year, federal officials help with an audit for the district's insurance, which can give the district some money back, according to Mika. She says any returns from insurance would help ahead of facing another potentially massive deficit this budget season. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Vanois. And looking towards fisheries, commercial Tanner crab fisheries around Kodiak will be closed going into next year. That's after the Alaska Department of Fish and Game released the results of the 2025 Tanner crab survey for the Kodiak, Chignik, and South Peninsula districts in October. The fisheries can only open if the estimated numbers of legal size male crab are far enough above abundance thresholds and that surplus abundance allows a minimum harvest level. The department says that minimum level is 100,000 pounds for sections of the Kodiak District and 200,000 pounds each for the Chignik and South Peninsula districts. Of the 6 sections surveyed in the Kodiak District, only 2, the southeast and southwest sections, met the regulatory abundance thresholds, but neither had enough surplus abundance to open for the minimum guideline harvest level of 100,000 pounds. Likewise, based on the 2025 survey results, the Chignik District met the regulatory abundance threshold, but surplus abundance was not high enough to justify 200,000-pound guideline harvest level. Therefore, the Chignik District will not open for the 2026 commercial Tanner crab season either. The South Peninsula District is broken into eastern and western sections. The western section was below the regulatory abundance threshold, so there's no surplus to harvest. Fish and Game said the eastern section met the regulatory abundance threshold, but the surplus is not enough to set a guideline harvest level of 200,000 pounds, which is the minimum to open that fishery. Crab fishermen in the region had been fishing on a strong cohort of Tanner crab that emerged in the scene in 2018, but have mostly aged out. That cohort provided 4 years of harvest opportunities for local fishermen, peaking in 2023 at 5.8 million pounds, the largest harvest in Kodiak since 1986. Scientists did observe another population bump in 2023, but it's less than half the size of the 2018 cohort. Even if enough of them survived to open a fishery, the harvest levels would be much less that time around, and the tanners will not grow to harvestable size until at least 2027. For the crabbing season in 2025, the harvest level was roughly 770,000 pounds and ended within a few weeks. And the city of Kodiak is handing over more control of its shipyard to contractor Highmark Marine Fabrication. The city council approved an updated agreement with the company, giving it price-setting authority in conjunction with the city manager. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports.
Highmark took over operation of Kodiak Shipyard from the city 5 years ago. Under the initial agreement, the city set service rates and Highmark paid the city $5,000 a month plus 15% of the gross earnings from shipyard services, which has since been amended. Highmark operates and maintains Kodiak's sole boat lift that services commercial fishing vessels, towing tugboats, and other vessels up to 660 tons. The company says in the last 2 years, it worked to decrease the number of days that vessels were dry docked and increase the number of vessels it hauls out or serviced by 35%. During a city council work session last month, Dee Monroe, a representative with the company, said that it's time to raise rates to adjust for inflation and market conditions.
We've tried to hold off this increase as long as possible. It's arguable from a business standpoint, maybe this increase should have been implemented about 2 years ago, but given the dire circumstances of the economy, we were kind of in agreement with the council to sort of forestall this.
Highmark asked the city to amend the agreement so it would be able to set its own prices. Outgoing city manager Randy Robertson told the city council last week that he met with Highmark's owner, Cooper Curtis, before he recommended the city council approve the updated agreement.
One of the things I've learned in the short time I've been here is how special the relationship we have with Highmark. They had a long history of providing top quality and out of the box thinking services to the community, to the city.
The city forecasts earning over $230,000 from Highmark this fiscal year after increasing its monthly payments on July 1st. The agreed rate schedule between Highmark and the city includes 3% annual gains for the city through June of 2030. The city is also letting Highmark quadruple the square footage of its on-site storage area within the shipyard. According to city documents, the company will go from having 2,000 to 8,000 square feet on-site. But the city says it's not expected to impact local port and harbor operations or revenue. Highmark says this will allow the company more space to set up temporary shelters for conducting industrial coatings for vessels at the shipyard. The updated agreement went into effect immediately after the October 23rd meeting, just ahead of the uptick in winter work Highmark typically gets from the local trawl fleet from November until January. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
The United Fishermen of Alaska, an industry trade group, held one of its two annual meetings in Kodiak last week. It was the first time in the island community in at least 20 years to approve proposals and letters for lawmakers at both the state and federal levels. I was at many of the presentations, and KMXT's Davis Hovey and I prepared this Q&A.
So, Brian, what is United Fishermen of Alaska, and what were they doing in Kodiak?
UFA is the statewide commercial fishing trade association. There's a lot of regional associations like for seiners, gill netters, or trawlers, but this group is meant to represent the entire industry in Alaska and works with policymakers like the Alaska Department of Fish and Game or the congressional delegation. Usually they have two annual meetings, one in Anchorage and another in either Juneau or a fishing community. The board president said very few people can remember the last time UFA met in Kodiak, but guessed it might have been in 2004. And with Kodiak's pretty large and prominent fishing fleet, the board decided it was time to have a meeting on the island again.
Very cool. So you mentioned that UFA works with policymakers. Who did they work with in that meeting?
There were some pretty prominent people at the meeting. Of course, Kodiak's State House Representative Louise Stutz gave a talk. She's long claimed to be a champion of fisheries to the legislature, and she wasn't the only state official, though. Doug Vincent Lang, the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, met with the association via Zoom, and both Senator Dan Sullivan and Representative Nick Begich III separately called in, too. They both gave updates, answered questions from the association, and took some feedback. Senator Lisa Murkowski didn't join the meeting herself, but one of her staffers spoke, so all three members of our congressional delegation were part of the meeting in one way or another.
All right, so let's start with Louise Stutz, since she's our representative here in Kodiak. What did she share about policy at the state level?
Louise Stutz was the only politician who attended the meeting and presented in person. Fisheries is one of the largest industries in Alaska, and the state has a lot of policies in the works. One of the recent moves was a bill approved by the legislature and signed by the Governor Mike Dunleavy in the last legislative session that reduces regulation for insurance pooling for commercial fishermen. The idea is to allow fishermen to split costs and reduce overhead. Here's UFA's executive director, Tracy Welch, explaining why that's good news for the group.
Insurance is becoming very expensive for folks, and it's a difficult space to navigate just because there's fewer people offering insurance.
She added that overall, while much of the industry is recovering from price crashes in 2022, costs have also significantly gone up for fishermen. That bill was one of the results of the Seafood Task Force that presented results earlier this year. Another result from that task force's findings that Louise Stutz is working on is a bill concerning tax credits for fisheries processing. Stutz added she's also working on focusing electronic monitoring requirements to specific fisheries instead of requiring every state vessel to have it. She claimed it could put some small fishing operations out of business by requiring them to buy equipment and pay to interpret all of the information from a monitoring system.
What about the others like Doug Vincent Lang and the congressional delegation? What policies did they focus on?
One of the policies that kept coming up was changes to the Marine Mammal Protection Act proposed by Begich back in July. Many of the changes would roll back protections for animals, like reducing population goals from maximum productivity to mere survival for a species. In a hearing by a U.S. House subcommittee, he called it a discussion draft, saying he hopes to hear from all stakeholders. Conservation groups like the Alaska Whale Foundation said the changes proposed could cause considerable harm to a species, but the United Fishermen of Alaska approved a letter supporting changes. Vincent Lang with Fish and Game said a middle ground from the current proposal was needed. Here's a clip of him saying about as much.
He went a little bit too far in some of it in our eyes, but we do support MMPA revision.
He also added that marine mammals should be managed to prevent ecosystem issues. Begich told the group he hopes to work with Democrat peers across the aisle on getting a more final version.
It's positioned as a discussion draft intentionally because we want to make sure that we are able to receive feedback in an honest and genuine and open way.
A staffer for Begich said the proposed changes do not have a bill number yet, nor has had any movement since its initial hearing in July. Other policies Begich and Sullivan especially talked about were reauthorizing the Young Fishermen's Development Act to support more people getting into the industry and bolstering the Coast Guard's funding and resources. And again, that was KMXT's Davis Hovey talking with me, Brian Benoit. And our last story for the day. We're nearly a month into the federal shutdown, and there's no sign the government will reopen anytime soon. Active duty military personnel still got paid on time this month, but Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said that service members won't get a check if the government shutdown continues beyond November 15th. As Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk, that sparked financial anxiety among many service members and their families, and groups across the state are stepping up to help.
John Tollerud walks me through rows and rows of thoughtfully organized stuff at the Salvation Army thrift store in Fairbanks.
So we've done some reorganizing recently, so our store's a little bit new. We've kind of changed things just to make sure that it works better for people, which is always nice.
Tollerud manages the store. It's packed with racks of winter coats, Halloween costumes, homecoming gowns, and even small kitchen appliances like microwaves. The store has a voucher program for families experiencing hardship, like the ongoing shutdown. It's a familiar situation for Tollerud. He was in the Army during the last government shutdown, which ended in 2019 after 35 days. He missed a paycheck.
I was part of the group that didn't receive their paycheck, and it was rectified. But yeah, I imagine that the longer something like this goes on, the more difficult it will be for families to afford things.
Even without a shutdown, nearly a quarter of military families struggle to put food on the table, according to government research. And anecdotally, nonprofit groups that serve military members around the state say they're already seeing increased need for essentials and assistance with bills. Sarah Riffer is the executive director of the Alaska Armed Services YMCA. The organization has a marketplace on Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage, where service members can pick up free essentials like groceries, hygiene products, and laundry detergent.
The week that we were unsure if our service members were going to get paid, we probably saw more feet come into our marketplace than what I have historically ever seen.
The organization assists military families nationwide. And last week, their national branch told ABC News that their food banks across the country have seen up to a 75% jump in demand. Riffer says many families are anxious about how they'll get through the colder weeks and months ahead if the shutdown continues.
I think that's really difficult for our service members. People are really nervous and they're unsure, and we're going into a time of year where heating bills are more and electric bills are more, and there's so many factors in our state that are unique that it just causes a lot of pause.
Fairbanks Community Food Bank volunteers also say they've seen traffic spike this month, but it's hard for them to quantify whether that's due to inflation, natural disasters, the government shutdown, or all of the above. Lori Frewirth volunteers with the American Legion Post 11 in Fairbanks. She says her organization isn't just reaching out to active duty service members and their families. They're also trying to support veterans in the community during the shutdown.
Most veterans that I've met are very proud, and they don't come to us hat in hand. They're willing to pay the price for the rest of us here in our country. So I firmly believe that we need to do all we can to help our veterans and our military and their families and help support them during this time.
While active duty military members have been paid during this shutdown, that's not true for many civilian workers or private contractors on military bases. According to the Federal Office of Personnel Management, more than 5,000 Alaskans work for the Department of Defense in a civilian role. That group includes John Haddix, an Army veteran who now manages fish and game on Eielson Air Force Base near Fairbanks. He and his family have reserves to get by while he's not getting paid, but he's worried about the people he works with.
Maybe even more frustrating to me is the newer employees that are living paycheck to paycheck. They're GS-7s making, 40 to 50,000 a year. and they're furloughed and not getting paid, and they don't have a backup.
Haddock says he's even more worried about the possibility that he and his coworkers won't get paid at all for that time. The Trump administration recently threatened to withhold back pay for some furloughed federal workers when the shutdown lifts. With reporting from Ava White in Anchorage, I'm Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks.
The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center is committed to offering safe shelter and resources to victims and their children fleeing domestic violence and/or sexual assault, including the use of a 24-hour crisis line. KWRCC is open to individuals of any gender who need anonymous support from a trained advocate. The crisis line is available at 907-486-3625.
And if you enjoy this podcast and want to support local news, make sure to subscribe to KMXT on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. That's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm your host, Brian Benoit. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.